My name is Michael, and I work at a 24-hour pharmacy. I had some pretty wild experiences with customers, especially during the height of the pandemic when the crazies would come in and ask about horse tranquilizers and stuff. But out of all the crazy customers I had, nothing will ever top what happened to me last week. I was working the night shift, which is always pretty quiet. In 3 hours, I think I had 5 customers, maybe 6. We had security cameras everywhere, and my boss had a really strict policy about not using cell phones or reading books on the job. So, even though I was bored out of my mind, I couldn't do anything besides just stand there and wait for people to come. Then midnight rolled around. That was the halfway point of my shift. The front door opened, and the man walked in. He was tall and extremely skinny. He was missing a lot of his teeth, and his skin was really wrinkled and leathery. I could tell he was on some kind of substance. With customers like that, I have to be very careful that they didn't try to steal anything from the shelves. I kept an extra close watch on this guy as he wandered around all the aisles and slowly made his way back to my counter.
"Where's all the cough syrup?"
he asked. I pointed to the cough syrup behind the glass case. Because drug addicts used cough syrup to make, we had to change our policies. It was still over the counter, but we had to limit how much we could sell to an individual customer. "Right here," I said. "Would you like to buy a bottle?"
"I need all of them,"
he said. "I'm sorry, sir, but that's against our policy. Just one per customer." For a second, he stared at me as if I just murdered his pets. Then his face went blank and he said,
"See you around."
And then he left. I had a really bad feeling about that man. Usually, when addicts like that don't get what they want, they'll start screaming profanities at me. They'll say the worst things, but eventually they'll leave. But this guy acted weirdly calm as he left. I knew in my heart that he was going to come back. About an hour passed, and no other customers came in. Then the man came back. But this time he wasn't wearing the same dirty brown suit as before. He had a giant cap, an eye patch, boots, black t-shirt and jeans, and a plastic hook. I couldn't believe it. He came back in a pirate costume. I had to hold my hand over my mouth so that he wouldn't see me laughing.
"Hello, matey," he said. "I need cough syrup for me and my crew."
"I'm sorry, sir," I said. "Like I told you last time, I can only sell one per customer. It's our policy."
Last time? I've never been here before, matey."
What was he thinking? How did he even get a pirate costume? It was honestly the most surreal moment of my life. I started laughing at the ridiculousness of it, but then he pulled out a long, thin sword and started waving it at me. And unlike his plastic hook, the sword was very real. Before I could do anything, he jumped over the counter and started swiping the sword toward my face. There wasn't a lot of room behind the counter. It was a small space with a bunch of shelves filled with medicine, and I didn't have anywhere to go. I just had to dodge him.
"Argh!"
he shouted as he slashed the sword at me. The tip of his blade cut into my shirt and I had to twist to the side. I fell against one of the shelves and tripped. As I stumbled to the ground, he lowered the sword to my neck.
"Get up!"
he demanded. I did what he asked. He kept digging the tip of the sword into my throat and he told me to jump onto the counter. "Why?" I asked.
"Because I'm gonna make you walk the plank,"
he said.
"And when you do, I'll steal my booty."
Now, I know this sounds funny, but it was honestly terrifying. I mean, a real sword was pointed at my neck. If I did even one thing wrong, he would kill me. I had to play into this pirate fantasy. As he led me back toward the counter, I reached over toward the phone hidden next to my work computer. I pushed off the receiver and dialed 911. I knew he was staring at my face, so I made sure not to look down at the phone as I did it. Then I climbed onto the counter and he stepped back. He still held up the sword, but now it was thankfully not poking into my throat. "Tell me again what I have to do," I said.
"Walk the plank,"
he screamed. "But we're not on a pirate ship," I said. "We are in Murphy's Pharmacy on Maple Street." He was insane, so I knew I shouldn't argue with his delusions, but I wanted to make sure I said the address so that the 911 dispatchers could hear me. The man stared at me until I started walking across the top of the counter. It was only about 4 feet off the ground. If I jumped off it like he wanted, I probably wouldn't hurt myself, so I started walking. When I got to the edge of the counter, I stopped.
"Keep going!"
the man screamed.
"You have to jump head first!"
But how could I jump head first from a counter that was only 4 feet off the ground? I didn't think it was physically possible, and if I did try to jump head first, I'd probably hurt myself. I had a feeling that the cops had heard the 911 call, so I decided to stall. "Can I say my last words now?" I asked.
"Fine,"
he said.
"But make it quick, matey."
I did not make it quick. I basically started to say my entire life story. I don't even remember what I said exactly, but I just kept talking and talking. I could see that the man in the pirate costume was getting more and more frustrated. Eventually, he screamed that time was up and I had to jump. And that was when the police came. Perfect timing. Two officers rushed in. One of them grabbed the man, pulled the sword out of his hands, and cuffed him. The second one came up to me and asked what was going on. "Honestly," I said, "I have no idea. All this guy wanted was cough syrup." They took him away and arrested him for... honestly, I have no idea what crimes he committed. Thankfully, I never saw him. I've had a bunch of other strange encounters with customers since then, but nothing will ever be as strange as the guy who dressed up like a pirate.
I grew up in a really small town, so there weren't a lot of places for me and my friends to hang out. Back in high school, we either went to a crappy skate park or the open dirt field behind Walmart. Back then, my best friend was named Grady. I thought he was really fun, but my mom always warned me that he was a bad influence. He was the kind of guy who didn't take school seriously and always mouthed off to the teachers. He was particularly mean to our algebra teacher, Miss Phelps. He slashed her tires, stole money from her purse. He even made her cry once when he drew a picture of her on the back of his homework. I didn't join in whenever Grady was being disruptive in school, but I never stopped him either. I guess I was just too afraid to lose him as a friend. The summer before senior year, Grady and I were hanging out behind Walmart throwing rocks at pigeons. It was Grady's idea, of course. He had been held back twice, which meant he was already 18, but he acted like a 12-year-old. It was late afternoon, and pretty hot, too. I was telling Grady about a joke that my dad told me when he interrupted me screaming, "Dude, look, look!" He was pointing towards the back of Walmart, where the trucks pulled in to load up supplies. I saw a short, chubby woman in a Walmart uniform carrying boxes. It took me a second to recognize that this was Miss Phelps, our algebra teacher. I couldn't believe it. Grady instantly started laughing. "I guess she has a second job for the summer," he said. "What a loser. She probably has gambling debts." "Yeah," I said. "Probably." I didn't want to argue with him, even though I knew that teachers barely get paid anything. And the fact that this was her second job wasn't really something you should laugh at. "Dude," he said, "this is so embarrassing. Come on." He grabbed my wrist and pulled me closer to the building. The year before, some business had tried to build something on this empty field, but for some reason, they never finished it. So the field had a lot of holes and dirt piles. We hid behind one of the piles so we could watch Miss Phelps without seeing us. Now, I was pretty close enough to see her face. I felt pretty sorry for her. The boxes she was carrying must have been pretty heavy because her face was red and sweaty. She looked miserable. Grady nudged me in the side. Dude, watch this. He picked up a medium-sized rock, and before I could stop him, he threw it at our teacher. Grady wasn't a good thrower. Back when he was terrorizing pigeons, he always missed. But this time, the rock hits its target. It crashed into Miss Phelps's back just as she was stepping onto the ramp. I watched in horror as she fell backwards and landed hard on the concrete. The box must have been filled with something fragile because it made a loud, shattering noise when it fell on top of her. Grady looked at me in a panic. We both knew that we couldn't run away without her seeing us, so we both stayed perfectly still behind the dirt pile. Miss Phelps looked all around her to see who had thrown the rock. She looked right at the dirt pile, and for an awful second, I thought she knew we were there. She stood up and started limping towards us when her manager rushed out and demanded to know what happened. She explained what happened, but the manager didn't seem to care. He pointed towards the drop box, which must have had something pretty valuable inside, and he just screamed at her. It was awful. She was getting blamed for something that we did. He screamed so much that Grady and I had enough time to run out of the field before anybody saw us. Afterwards, Grady and I went back to my house. Grady was laughing so hard he could barely breathe. He said that he hoped Miss Phelps would get fired. And that was when I finally had enough. I told him I did not want to be his friend anymore. I said that people were right about him. He was a bad influence. Then I asked him to leave. I knew that the rest of the summer would be really boring without someone to hang out with, but I had to get him out of my life. I was shocked to see him at my front door the next morning. He apologized and promised that he wouldn't hurt anyone ever again. He asked if I wanted to come with him and just walk around for a bit. He seemed pretty sincere, so I said yes. But I should have known he had something else planned. We walked down to our town's main road and ended up once again behind Walmart. He smiled darkly. He then started walking into the empty field. I suspected that he wanted to terrorize Miss Phelps again, so I told him that I didn't want to go. He promised over and over that he didn't plan to do anything, but I knew he was lying, so I told him no. That's when he snapped. He cussed me out and told me that I was chicken for abandoning him. Then he scooped up one of the biggest rocks he could find and walked back to the dirt pile. I could see that Miss Phelps was once again moving boxes in the back of the building. She was even limping a little, I guess from the fall the day before. Grady looked at me, warning me with his eyes that I better not say anything. I knew I should have gone to Miss Phelps and told her, but I was too intimidated. I just waited on the sidewalk. Then, just as Grady snuck into the hiding spot behind the dirt pile, I heard a loud crash, and then heard Grady screaming in pain. I couldn't see what happened, but I could tell that he'd gotten hurt. "Oh God," he screamed. "My leg!" He must have fallen into a hole. Instead of running toward him, I ran towards Miss Phelps. I figured she could help me call an ambulance or something. "Miss Phelps," I said, "do you have a phone? I think Grady's hurt." She looked at me. I'll never forget the smile on her face. "I know," she said. "I spent the whole night digging this trap." I backed away from her. You wanted him to get hurt?" I asked. "It's karma," she said. "Now I know he's your friend, so I won't stop you from calling the hospital, but just know that no one else is coming out here for a long, long time. So if you don't say anything, no one will hear him." "Do you have a phone?" I repeated. "Yes," she said. She dug into her pocket and handed me her phone. I could still hear his screams for help. I was about to dial 911 when Miss Phelps asked me, "Have you ever wondered what your life would be like without Grady?" I paused for a moment. Then, I handed her back the phone. I didn't call the cops at that moment. In fact, I never did. "See you at school," she said, and walked back to Walmart. On my walk back home, I ran into some other kids from school. They weren't really my friends because Grady always told me they were losers. I asked them if they wanted to hang out, and they said yes. The next day, I went back to the empty field, and there was no more hole. Someone had filled it in and left. No one ever saw Grady again. I probably should have told the police about what happened, but I never did. I was too busy enjoying my senior year.
It was going to be one of the best days of my career. It had been a long couple of weeks of interviews, reference checks, and phone calls, but I'd finally gotten a new job. I put on my new outfit and checked myself in the mirror after a minute of patting my cat who slept on the corner of my desk. I knew that my father would have been proud had he seen me come this far. Outside, the sun neared the horizon line, and I knew that it was time to get moving. It wasn't a long drive from my house, but by the time I pulled out, the sky already sparkled with a few sightings of stars. The gate was open, allowing me to pull in and find a parking spot where the other security guard met me.
"Well, that's all of them," he said as he was getting into his truck. "The park is all yours, kid. Call me if you have any questions or concerns." I nodded, then closed the gate after he drove out and onto the main road. As I turned, I took in the sight of the rolling hills, covered in headstones and small mausoleums at the hill peaks, like lighthouses towering over the graveyard. As the night fell, only the lampposts along the walkway illuminated the area, and not very well. Though the graveyard was massive, and they'd permitted me the use of the golf cart, I decided to walk for the first night. It was nice to take my time to learn the area. It astounded me how many rows upon rows of gravestones filled the fields of pristinely cut grass. Several of them had flowers set beside them, but most of them were barren with little fissures and crumbles. Being one of the largest graveyards in the states, the place was constantly growing and expanding new plots for the never-ending supply of the dead. As I passed the first mausoleum, I took out my flashlight and checked the area. I was informed that squatters would use the mausoleums as a makeshift home for the evening. I'm not sure how anyone was comfortable with sharing a sleeping quarters with the dead, but it was one of the bigger problems with the graveyard. The other problem was that many of the older mausoleums were made with valuable decorations that were starting to go missing. A few hours had passed with nothing eventful except a few raccoons attempting to break into one of the dumpsters. It was the loud plink noise that caught my attention. But it was an echo from far away, and hard to distinguish where it was coming from. As I started to look for the source, all the lampposts in the graveyard flickered, then shut off completely. Though I could see where I was walking from the moonlight, I still removed my flashlight. I'd been told that the power system, being older, would shut off from time to time, and only required resetting the power, which was by the entrance of the graveyard. I decided to investigate the cause of the noise before resetting the power. A strange eeriness filled the graveyard where the light once stood. Another clink gave me a destination. One of the oldest mausoleums towards the back of the lot was the source. I turned off my flashlight and silently approached the mausoleum. I crouched low to remain covered in the shadows, then jumped out to catch the perpetrator. But it was empty. The stone tomb inside was open. When I peeked into the tomb, I found it completely empty, and along the edge was a dirty trail. My heart began throbbing as my imagination jumped to a level I wouldn't normally think about. Was the dead walking around the graveyard? I decided to go fix the light system. If I was going to find the dead walking around the surface, I'd rather do so in the light. When I approached the control panels of the lighting, I flicked the required switches to reset the system. Not even a slight buzz through the wires, and none of the lights returned to life. A movement out in the yard caught my attention, and I abandoned the quest of fixing the lights until I thoroughly checked the area.
I took silent steps as I approached the area, and I could hear little shuffles of movement. I leaped from my hiding spot, and my heart sank as my fears stood before me. A skeletal face looked at me from a mossy, leaf-covered body. In my frozen fear, the creature turned and dashed away from me, which allowed me to catch a glimpse of the gold-plated plaque in its grasp. Without another thought, I chased that figure. I slipped on the grass, but I found my footing and made up the distance. The undead intruder didn't seem to run as fast as myself. When I neared, I dove and wrapped my hands around the creature. I assumed I'd be wrapping my hands around a thin skeletal frame, but there was a body filled with muscle and meat. We collapsed to the ground, nearly breaking a headstone that met our force. We tussled around for a moment, until I pried the plaque into my hand, and the unwanted guest pushed away from me. As he returned to his feet, the Halloween skeleton mask fell from his face, and I got a good look at him. I considered holding him down, but there would be no use in it, as I had nothing to bind him. So I let him free, where he ran towards the border of the graveyard and vanished into the night. The police took their sweet time arriving at the area where I filed my report, and we searched the light systems to find that the wires had been cut in several places. Upon further searching, we found the location of the stolen plaque, as well as a grave that had been dug up. Who knows what sort of things he found buried with the dead, if anything at all. The undertaker wasn't thrilled about the handiwork, but it wasn't too hard to set the place back into order. I got the system fixed and recommended a few things to my boss so that we could keep the masked bandits from getting off with anything valuable from the graveyard. Though I described the robber to the police, I know that he's still out there stalking graveyards under the guise of the dead, prying cheap finds from the dead.
My name is Douglas. I'm 53 years old. I have a small shop in which I sell sportswear, clothes, sports shoes, also some bodybuilding items. Last year during Black Friday, I also took the chance to make some good business, which was precisely what happened. I was very happy with the outcome. Great profit was made, especially because we sold products that were already waiting too long to be bought. Now, back then, I had two employees, Dexter and Marcello. They were both excellent professionals. I also had a wife, Prudence, who was 10 years younger than me. When I arrived home after that busy Friday, I was tired but happy to speak to my wife. "It was a success. Lots of work, but totally worth it," I said to her.
"I'm glad to hear that, honey. Now finish your late dinner and then let's go to bed. You need your rest," my wife said.
"That's the best idea I heard all day," I replied, finishing the fine meal that Prudence had prepared for me. The next day when I woke up, it was already 3 p.m. Of course, our shop was closed, and obviously my wife wasn't in bed with me. For sure, her day started a lot earlier. I was just glad that she kept quiet and didn't wake me up. I definitely needed that extra rest. I went to the bathroom to take a shower. I shaved and brushed my teeth. When I got out of the bathroom, I noticed the house was still very silent. I realized my wife wasn't home. She went out and didn't return yet. Nothing strange, I thought to myself, as I prepared myself a cup of coffee. What was odd was the fact that the newspaper was nowhere to be seen. This was something unusual. I called Prudence to check on her. Her cell phone was off. When it was already 10 p.m., my wife was still away, and I tried to phone several times already. Worried, I went to the police. There wasn't much that I could tell them, just a classic case of a missing person.
"Did you try calling the hospitals nearby? Her friends, relatives, co-workers?" The police asked me the usual questions.
"Actually, not really. It didn't even cross my mind," I answered.
"Do so, please. Keep in touch within the next 48 hours, Mr. Murray. If your wife's still missing, we'll then open a file on her and start an investigation," they replied.
It seemed fair enough.
That night I called several hospitals, not just from our area. I also called everyone that I could think of that knew Prudence. Since my wife didn't work outside home, she had no co-workers or bosses that I could contact. No one had seen Prudence since the last 24 hours. More days went by. My wife was now officially a missing person. We didn't have any sons or daughters, so I was now dealing with her disappearance on my own. But show must go on, right? This meant I had to get back to my shop. The fact that I was the boss and the owner didn't allow me to take time off, especially after that profitable Black Friday. There was a lot of work to do. I also told my employees Dex and Marcello about what happened. They were very supportive.
I'm very sorry to hear about that, Mr. Murray. I don't really know what to say,
Dexter said.
If the authorities are already working on the case, the best thing to do is wait and pray,
Marcello replied.
I thank them both. My hopes were not very high, though. Nevertheless, I was still going to receive some unexpected news, and definitely not the kind that I wished for. During the next week, I went to the bank, and I was stunned when I found out that half of my savings were missing. Already under enormous pressure, I made quite a scene. What is this? I was robbed! I demand an explanation! Within a few moments, I was now speaking to the manager in his own office. Mr. Murray, I'm very sorry, but your wife just came here last week and she simply took that money with her, cash. Both y'all allowed to move that money, as you must remember. Mrs. Murray said that you were going through a lot of work and needed that money to pay some additional bills, and that you were also going to open up a new shop. I didn't ask any questions, since both of you are our clients for 20 years now. When I heard those words, I snapped. Just too much. I didn't hurt the bank manager, but I destroyed his office while screaming like a maniac. Of course, security was called. And then the police, too, as I was taken under custody. Not for long, though. Next day, I was out of jail. The authorities were very comprehensive, and the bank's manager as well. My wife was now being pursued as a criminal who was missing. In all, she had taken $60,000 with her. Money that I needed to keep the business flowing. The half that I still had wasn't enough. Also because I needed it for my own personal expenses. Health insurance, houses, we had two, cars, etc. I had to let one of my employees go. Don't worry, Mr. Murray, you can let me go. Dexter needs the job more than I do. I mean, he's older, I'm young, and I was thinking of going back to my country anyway, Marcello said. He was a Colombian citizen. Thank you for understanding, Marcello. I'm sorry. It was great working with you. You're a good man and you will be missed. Best of luck, I said. At least this decision made it easy for me. I sold my houses and bought an apartment. I also sold my cars, which were expensive, and got a modest one. Step by step, I was able to pull myself together. But as time passed, I got super obsessed with the idea of finding my wife. Tired of waiting for the police to give me answers, I hired a private investigator. A woman, actually, named Joanne Moon. And within 3 months, I was summoned to Joanne's office. I have something to show you, she said on the phone. Burning with excitement and curiosity, in less than 1 hour, I was in Joanne Moon's office. We found our wife. And her friend. You can see for yourself, Mr. Murray, Joanne said as she showed me a collection of pictures. I didn't even say a word when I saw what and who was in the pictures. My wife, smiling and having fun on the beach. But she wasn't alone. Marcello was with her. In some pictures, they were kissing and holding each other. I understood immediately what had happened. I felt stupid and betrayed. The American police was informed of all this, but since Prudence and Marcello are living in Colombia, my only hope is for them to return to the United States so that they can be brought to justice. Unless I travel there, take justice in my own hands.